This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After Georgia, there will be 41 Republicans in the Senate and maybe 42. The recount continues in Minnesota, and the president-elect continues to build his cabinet, more than enough to frame our weekly visit with a political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us every Wednesday to plug his new blog and review the political news of the week. There will be new governors in Arizona and now New Mexico as Janet Napolitano and Bill Richardson move to Washington, D.C. Senate appointments yet to be named in New York and Illinois to replace Clinton and Obama. No final count yet in Minnesota, but Georgia was settled yesterday. And it'll be an open race for the Senate in Florida in 2 years' time. Later on, we'll talk about the future of the Republican Party with former Arkansas governor and former presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. And as always, we begin with a trivia question.
Hi, Neil. Well, of course, you know, many Democrats have always blamed Ralph Nader for Al Gore's defeat in 2000. And had Saxby Chambliss lost in yesterday's runoff in Georgia, a lot of people might have blamed a third-party candidate who kept Chambliss from getting a majority of the vote on November 4th. That's why they went to a runoff. Okay, the question. What two senators were defeated this year in part because third-party candidates took away conservative votes that might have gone to them?
Okay, if you think you know which two senators were defeated this year in part because third-party candidates took away conservative voters that might have gone to them. By that, they're Republicans, Ken.
They are. Not too many Democrats lost.
That's true. Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And, Ken, there's big news this week. Not only Georgia, you're now a blogger. Who would have thunk it?
Well, the Political Junkie column, which was once a week, is now they thought that the column was going too long at 3,000 words per column, so now it's every day at 3,000 words. It started Monday. Over five people, I believe, have been reading
really
it around the country.
It out. And, yes. and they're all your relatives.
Yes.
If those not related to Ken would like to see it, it's at npr.org. But let's get on to that news from Georgia. Saxby Chambliss, well, almost won re-election. He got 49.8. And this time around, though, it wasn't even close.
Right. It was 57 to 43. Georgia, of course, is one of the few states that you need a majority to win. I think Vermont may be the only other state that you need a majority.
Louisiana, I think, too.
How's by you?
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. But that was basically World War III. I mean, it was they say it's the first salvo for the 2010 campaign, the beginning of the 2012 campaign. If you think of all the presidential candidates who were down there, it was Mike Huckabee, it was Mitt Romney, it was Sarah Palin, it was Ludacris. I think he's running for president too.
Yeah.
But Ludacris was campaigning for Jim Martin, the Democratic candidate, as did Bill Clinton, as did Al Gore. And it was really, you know, Barack Obama not being on the ballot apparently is what really hurt Jim Martin, even though Jim Martin outpolled Barack Obama in Georgia on November 4th. But the black turnout was down. Democratic turnout seemed to be down. Republican enthusiasm was really big. And Saxby Chambliss tried to make the argument and made the argument that, one, they don't want a veto-proof or a filibuster-proof majority of the Democrats. They don't want another rubber stamp for Barack Obama. And the conservative Georgia, which had been reliably conservative, except it was very close on November 4th, came through for him.
And Barack Obama did not go campaign in Georgia, though he did cut a campaign spot.
He made some robocalls as well.
Okay.
He did.
Let's go back to Minnesota now. How long does this recount take?
Well, it will be over December 16th. Right now, they're counting all 2.9 million votes by hand. Right now, incumbent Republican Norm Coleman leads Democratic challenger Al Franken by 303 votes. I mean, everyone is being scrutinized and analyzed and fought over, but there are several provisional ballots, disputed ballots, that will be decided upon on December 16th. And so by December 19th, they will certify a winner. So we have two more weeks of the Minnesota thing. But what it means, of course, what happened in Georgia is that Democrats, the most they can get is 59. They will not get the magic 60, although, you know, of course, any senator could switch over. You know, Susan Collins, Olympia Snowe could switch over to the Democrats. Joe Lieberman could switch over the Republicans. A lot of things are
different issues. These
exactly.
coalitions are hardly firm. So right. In any case, there are now, with a couple of cabinet appointments, new governors in New Mexico today. Bill Richardson was named to be Commerce Secretary. And in Arizona, where Janet Napolitano will now come to Washington, D.C. To be the Director of Homeland Security.
Right. Well, Bill Richardson, it's obvious what he's trying to do. He's obviously always wanted to follow in the footsteps of Herbert Hoover, going from Commerce Secretary to President. It's a long
tradition in
tradition
this country.
And
what a success story.
It certainly was. But Bill Richardson obviously clearly wanted to be Secretary of State. First of all, because he also wanted to be Vice President and President. And he was quoted as saying that he was disappointed with the Hillary Clinton pick. And one questioner, a Hispanic questioner at the press conference today, asked Barack Obama if this was a consolation prize. And of course, Barack Obama said, absolutely, that's not the case. But, you know, a lot of people felt that, you know, he wanted bigger stuff. He has a, you know, globe-trotting reputation. But, you know, something, he could also be a very good salesman, a good a cheerleader for the economic policies of Barack Obama.
We have some people on the line who think they know the answer to today's trivia question. And again, because of the runoff forced in Georgia, because the Saxby Chambliss, the Republican, just failed to get over 50% in the general election on the 4th of November. Well, what other two senators lost re-election bids this time around, partly because of third-party candidates? And let's see if we can get Ben on the line. And Ben's calling us from Roslindale in Massachusetts.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I'm going to have to go with Ted Stevens in Alaska. I'm pretty sure about that one. And John Sununu in New Hampshire would be my other choice.
Your neighboring state of New Hampshire.
Well, Ted Stevens is exactly right. Ted Stevens only lost by about 3,500 votes. And there was a third-party candidate who got 13,000 votes. His name was Bob Byrd of the Alaska Independence Party. Ted Stevens did go down in part because of a third-party candidate. But in New Hampshire, Gene Shaheen did get a majority of the vote. It wasn't a third-party candidate who hurt John Sununu.
Ben, you get half a no prize. I'm not sure what that's worth.
Great. Well, I might end up re-gifting it this Christmas.
Instead of the Nobel Prize, just the no prize.
Just the no prize. Let's get Mike on the line. Mike with us from Golden Valley in Minnesota.
Hi. Well, I guess hearing the first caller changed my answer on one of them. For the second, that's Ted Stevens. For the second one, I'm going to say Gordon Smith.
And Gordon Smith is correct, too. There was a Constitution Party candidate named Dave Brownlow who got 87,000 votes, and Gordon Smith only lost by 50,000 votes to Jeff Merkley. So the two answers are Ted Stevens in Alaska and Gordon Smith in Oregon.
And, Mike, that was a deft change of answer there in midstream.
What can I say? I'm just taking advantage of the situation.
All right. Well, keep listening, Mike, and enjoy your no prize.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
They can share that.
They can share that no prize, yes. It's, and here's an email. This is just about the situation in Georgia yesterday. My sister voted in a church. This from Rebecca in Brattleboro, Vermont. My sister voted in a church outside Brunswick, Georgia yesterday and reports a table full of Chambliss literature inside the polling place. No Martin material to be seen. Interesting, because Senator Obama, now former Senator Obama, kept open all of his 25 offices, I think, in Georgia to try to mount a very vigorous effort on behalf of Jim Martin.
It was clear that the Republican Party wanted this. I don't know if they wanted it more than the Democrats, but think of everybody who came down. They spent a ton of money. Both sides did. They really wanted it. What's most interesting, switching subjects for 1 second, about the real Bill Richardson choice, I think the real question is, what's wrong with Chris Dodd, Mike Gravel, and Dennis Kucinich? Because they're the only Democrats who didn't get a point. I mean, you have Joe Biden.
Yet.
It's early. That's true.
It's true. There's you know, it's transportation, HUD. There's a lot of things left
But
over.
You know something? I mean, I remember Richard Nixon naming George Romney, who was a rival for the nomination, to the cabinet in 68. But I don't remember any president picking this many rivals as part of his team. It's very fascinating to watch.
And yet also some pretty interesting decisions yet to be made by the governors of Illinois and New York to replace Senators Obama and Clinton.
That's right. Barack Obama's term would be up in 2010 anyway, but Governor Rod Blagojevich does need to make an appointment, a replacement. There are so many people on the list. Jesse Jackson Jr., Congressman Danny Davis, Jan Schakowsky is a congresswoman who wants it. Tammy Duckworth's name has been mentioned, but although she's also mentioned as Veteran Affairs in the Obama cabinet. And in New York, I think everybody.
Single person in the state of New York.
Exactly. Clyde Hoberman had this great column in the New York Times the other day about naming. We need a gay Roman Catholic, upstate, lesbian, every constituency possible. So, David, you don't envy David Patterson, but Hillary Clinton says she's not going to resign as Senate until the Senate confirms her. Obviously, that would be until mid to late January. January. And if that's the case, then we have at least another month and a half to speculate on who this nominee will be.
And let the fundraising begin in Florida, where the incumbent Republican Senator Mel Martinez said he will not be running for re-election in 2 years' time. No, wants to spend more time with the family. The fact that his approval ratings are in the 30s has nothing to do with it.
Well, that has a lot to do with it. I don't. If I got a nickel for everybody who said I want to, you know, spend more time with my family. But the interesting things as the Democrats are elevating one of the most prominent Hispanic Democrats, Bill Richardson, Mel Martinez, one of the most prominent Hispanic Republicans, is taking himself out of the mix. What's also interesting is that, of course, if he resigns early, Charlie Crist, the Republican governor, could name a replacement. And the name of Jeb Bush has come up as a possible candidate. He has not ruled it out. I always thought he didn't want to come to Washington. He'd rather have a power base in Florida. But if he were to be the senator, that would be very interesting, because eventually, you know, he could run for president. We haven't had a Bush running for president since 2004.
It's been a while. Yeah. You have to have somebody new in there.
I've been following this stuff on my daily blog, which could be found at NPR.org.
And what's it called, by the way?
Political Junkie.
What a name. As we go back also on these on those governors being appointed to positions in Washington, cabinet positions, there will be a new female governor and, a Republican actually gets elevated in Arizona to replace Democrat Janet Napolitano.
Right. And actually, both governors, the new governors will be female, even though Janet DePaul's being replaced by Jan Brewer. It's a party change. Jan Brewer there's no lieutenant governor in Arizona. She's the Secretary of State, and she's very, very conservative on social issues, on taxes, on abortion. So ideologically, it's a big change in Arizona. In New Mexico will get its first female governor, Diane Denish, who's the lieutenant governor, who's already been planning to run for governor in 2010 because Bill Richardson was term limited. So she will be elevated to the governorship.
Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, our political junkie, who joins us here on the program every Wednesday in Studio 3A.
Did you mention the blog?
I've heard that there is a new blog at NPR.org. Yeah, it's called The Political Junkie. Yes, you can read that and, well, look for old columns that you can just kick dirt over now, because that is dead as a doornail. Ken Rudin's going to be with us. We're going to be joined by Mike Huckabee. You know, we got enough talk show hosts competition already. Now, the former Arkansas governor and Republican presidential candidate is in the talk show business. He's also on some people's short list for presidential Republican nomination in 4 years' time. So stay with us. We're going to be talking about the future of the Republican Party and, well, it's time in the electoral wilderness. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Ken Rudin is still with us, NPR's political editor, our political junkie, now NPR's newest blogger. You can keep up with his daily blog at npr.org. Two surprising names came out on top of the Iowa caucuses last January. One went on to be elected president of the United States. One now hosts a TV talk show. Though, to be fair, many talk about former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee among the strong possibilities for the Republican nomination for president 4 years from now. For the rest of this hour, we'll focus on the future of the Republican Party with Governor Huckabee. He also has a new book out titled Do the Right Thing. And we'd like to hear from Republicans in our audience today about the future of the GOP and the lessons of 2008. Does the party need to moderate social views to win back independents and some Democrats? And or does it need to stick to the values embraced by the party base and the party platform? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Mike Huckabee joins us today from the studios of member station WDET in Detroit. And Governor, nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Great to be back.
And I have to ask you about the big political news of the day. What do you make of Bill Richardson shaving his beard?
Bill is a great, great guy, and I think with or without the beard, he's still going to be a very effective cabinet secretary. Very smart man, probably one of the most experienced people, and could frankly have served in any one of about a dozen positions and would have done very, very well.
We're going to be talking for the most of the rest of the time about the future of the party. I know you write about it in the book. Can the Republican Party get back into power if it is perceived as the anti-gay, anti-abortion, and anti-immigration party?
Well, I don't think that's how it really is perceived. I think the problem with the Republican Party, it advertised one thing and delivered something else. When it pushed that it was going to balance budgets and police corruption, it was going to serve competently, that it was going to make sure that people could keep even a greater portion of their paycheck, and that it was going to push government out to the local levels and not centralize so much in Washington. Well, it did everything exactly opposite of that. And like any product, when you advertise something and you deliver something different, the next time people reach for another product on the shelf. And that's exactly what's happened in the last two election cycles.
Well, you're talking about big government conservatism, which a lot of people find an oxymoron. And I think you're going to find a lot of agreement in the Republican Party about smaller government and lower taxes. It's those social issues that seem to be divisive, in which a lot of people looking at what happened in November say, well, that's what cost John McCain and Sarah Palin a lot of votes among independents in places like Pennsylvania.
Well, actually, it's not. If you look at California, they voted for the marriage amendment, as did Florida. Barack Obama won both states. The marriage issue has been on the ballot in 30 states. It's won in all 30 states. This country is still not exactly pro-abortion. There are a lot of people that think there ought to be some legal avenues for it. But I don't know of many people who just think abortion is a wonderful idea. And also, the pro-life movement is beginning to do a better job of helping people to understand that it's not just about abortion. One of the key chapters in my new book is really about that, and it's called What About Created Equal? Do You Not Understand? And it's the fact that real pro-life people are not anti-abortion. They just believe in the dignity, the worth, and they believe in the intrinsic value of every single human being. And that's true whether a person is an 8-month-old unborn child or an 80-year-old woman undergoing hospice care.
Yet the Republican Party platform clearly calls for the repeal of Roe v. Wade, and that is, not likely to happen, at least for the next 4 years.
Probably not. But that doesn't mean that the issue goes away. There were people who thought slavery was a great idea, that it was okay for one person to own another person, and people argued for that. Really, if you look at the pro-life movement, many of us don't believe that a person should own another person, that one person can devalue another person to the point that we think their life is no longer worth living. And when we decide that a life is able to be terminated because it represents to us an inconvenience or an economic interruption, then we really have crossed sort of in a new definition of when things are right or when they're wrong. And if, in fact, we can decide that an unborn child represents an economic inconvenience or a social interruption, and therefore we have the right to terminate that child, what then keeps us from having a future situation where the people of our children's generation decide that in our older years, when we're in our 70s and 80s and maybe 90s, we represent an economic inconvenience and a social interruption to our children's generation? They have every right then to terminate us, because after all, we've taught them that that's exactly what's permissible.
And the way you stated, this sounds like an issue of principle from which you would not waver. Is, from the party's point of view, are pro-choice Republicans acceptable? Are pro-choice Republicans acceptable as part of a national ticket?
Well, people don't have to agree on every issue in order to be a part of the Republican Party. But like any political party, there are majorities that set in motion the platform. Not every Democrat is pro-abortion. There are pro-life Democrats, and they still can be Democrats. It doesn't mean that they're thrown out of the party, although maybe they are. I don't know. My point is that there are some fundamental things that bring Republicans together. I think that historically, in the last 30 years, Republicans have been predominantly pro-life. I'm glad of that. It's caused a lot of people to come to the party. Many of the so-called Reagan Democrats, many pro-life Catholics and others found their home politically in the Republican Party because they could not just see themselves voting for people who did not respect each and every human life. And you're right. For some of us, it is a principle issue. It's not a political issue. For me, it's never been political. You know, I may lose elections over it, but this is something that I hold as deeply and as dear as I would have believed that people 150 years ago believed that the idea of owning another human being was also a moral issue, not just a political one.
Ken Rudin?
Governor, a lot of people in the media, not too many Republicans, but people in the media have speculated that had John McCain named perhaps a Joe Lieberman or a Tom Ridge, two people who obviously are in favor of abortion rights, instead of Sarah Palin, that would have been better. John McCain would have been better served in November. But what would the Republican convention have looked like if he had picked a Lieberman or a Ridge?
Well, if he'd have picked Lieberman, it would have been a very empty room. He would have had the place to himself. It would have been a disaster. And that sort of shows just how little the media understands about the nature of Republicans and why they vote and how they vote. The idea that Joe Lieberman would have been a boost to the party completely misses what most people in the party are motivated to do. The fact is, there was a lot of talk about Joe Lieberman. John McCain was floating his name out as late as the Sunday before he picked Sarah Palin. He clearly wanted to pick Joe Lieberman. He talked to party chairmen across the country, talked to key Republican leaders, and he said, what do you think? Would it be okay? And I don't know of a single person who told him anything other than, you got to be kidding. And I think the pushback was so incredibly strong that by Monday of that week, he gave up. And then he went to Sarah Palin and selected her. And when he did, frankly, she brought a lot of energy and excitement to the base of the party because there was some level of relief that he had picked a pro-life running mate and somebody that did, in fact, relate to a large portion of the Republican base.
One more from Ken, then we'll start getting some callers on the
Governor,
line.
One more thing. If John McCain's initial instinct was to pick a Joe Lieberman, is the conservative party, is the conservative cause better off with the Republican defeat on November 4th? Would it be tougher for the conservatives had John McCain been elected?
Well, you know, I'm never going to say that it was better for us to lose an election because I could never come to that point. I think it would have been a disastrous election and the margin would have been a far greater spread had he picked Joe Lieberman because a lot of people would have simply said, you know what, we might as well just vote for the Democrats. In fact, I'll be honest with you, had he picked Joe Lieberman, I would have voted for Senator McCain in the November election because I'd pledged that I would support the nominee regardless of who it was. I would not have spoken at the convention, and I would not have gone out and actively campaigned for him.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. We're talking with former Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas. Let's go to Matt. Matt's with us from Middleton in Wisconsin.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Afternoon.
Governor Huckabee, I have to commend you. I am 31 years old, so I'm a very young Republican. And I was backing you as strong as I could from a value standpoint, from a fiscal conservative standpoint. You represented all of my values, and I was really, really pulling for you.
Thank you.
And I'm hoping that when 2012 comes around that you'll be on the ticket, and I'd like to see you with Congressman Paul Ryan out of Milwaukee. He is a young congressman that is true to Republican conservatism, both fiscal and social conservative issues. And that was my biggest issue. One is pro-life. You're pro-family. You're pro-defense. Fiscal conservative. You're everything that the Republican Party needed. And I think the only reason that we lost the election is John McCain does not have the clarity and the debate knowledge that you have in confronting Barack Obama. I think you against Barack Obama would have been a much more interesting debate and would have got the issues from the conservative Republican side into the line, into the cameras that we did not see from John McCain.
Matt, let me ask you, do you think a more conservative candidate, say Governor Huckabee, would have been more competitive than John McCain was in the Northeast and along the West Coast?
I think that if Governor Huckabee would have been up there, you would have seen a much more energized Republican base. You would have seen the Republicans that were standing up for George Bush in his first term would have been out there campaigning just like Barack Obama's supporters were. I know I was for Governor Huckabee, and I just couldn't get myself behind John McCain. He didn't have that fire in his belly that Governor Huckabee does, and he doesn't have that unwavering commitment to his values. Whether you like Governor Huckabee or not, he has stood for his issues, and you get a known quantity, a known person with known values.
I think Matt's running for campaign manager, so Governor Huckabee, you might want to get his phone number.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Matt. And the thing that I believe John McCain really failed to do in the latter weeks was define a Republican message as it related to the economy. And I love John McCain. I went out and campaigned vigorously for him to the point of losing my voice on the very last day before the election. But when he went back and voted for the bailout, I believe at that point it was very difficult for him to get his groove back. And it was very disheartening to many Republicans. Most Republicans, particularly fiscal conservatives, believe that it's fundamentally wrong for the government to take taxpayer money and to decide which businesses in the private sector are going to live and which ones are going to die, which ones are going to get government assistance from others and which ones won't. it's a role that government doesn't play any more than government ought to pick out which television shows get the Emmy this year. That's simply not a function of the government.
You could nominate a television show for the Emmy this year. Anyway, we'll move on from that. Matt, thanks very much for the phone call. Here's an email, following up on what you described as your pro-life position. Could you ask Governor Huckabee about the death penalty if all life is precious and sacred? Why is the life of a criminal exempted from this? God does not pick and choose the sanctity of life.
It's a very valid question, and I think the difference is that in the case of the termination of a life in the womb or euthanasia, you're taking an innocent life, a life that has not committed the crime, not threatened anybody, and the decision to terminate that life is being made by a single individual, i.e. the biological mother or perhaps the patient himself or herself. I think it's arguable, but there may be points at which we would finally say there should not be a death penalty. But there are certain crimes that are so absolutely evil in our society that we've decided that after a thorough process of adjudication and incredibly intense reviews, that certain people have so violated the code of behavior among their peers that the only way in which to not only serve as a deterrent for others but to ensure that they don't inflict that kind of harm on others is to terminate their lives. I think it's a very arguable point, and frankly, every time we had the death penalty carried out in my state during my tenure as governor, there would always be people at the gates of the governor's mansion holding a candlelight vigil. I remember one evening a member of my staff said, you know, I wish those folks would just go away and not come out here and sing these hymns and hold the candles. And I said, no, I'm glad they're there. I hope they stay. I hope there's never a moment which they don't come, because it needs to be a stark reminder that this is not just the failure of the person who is being executed. This is a failure of our entire society, that somehow we didn't do a better job as a society of creating an environment where a person found a better way to live life than to kill another person. And I always was, frankly, glad they were there as a point of conscience for all of us and a point of remembrance that this was not something that could be done in a cavalier spirit, not done simply or easily, but done with an extraordinary amount of pain. It also can only happen at the end of an exhaustive adjudicated process.
We're talking with former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee. His new book is Do the Right Thing, Inside the Movement, that's bringing common sense back to America. Also with us, political junkie Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Thad on the line. Thad is calling us from Salinas in California.
Hi.
Hi.
I was an early Oklahoma teenage Republican, helped elect Oklahoma's first Republican governor. I was a Goldwater Republican. Goldwater is for women's rights, for the woman's right to choose, and he believed gays should be allowed to serve in the military. I'm retired military, not gay. I believe the same things as Goldwater. And the reason the Republicans are down in numbers, not up, is because they've gotten away from those true Republican values. I voted for Obama because the last fiscally conservative president that we had was a Democrat.
Bill Clinton, it would have been, yes.
Yeah.
Mike Huckabee, there are certainly Governor Senator Goldwater endorsed a few positions that would be considered apostasies by the current Republican Party. Most people refer back instead to Ronald Reagan as the author of the last true Republican values.
Well, and I think Ronald Reagan probably did uphold those values and principles of the Republican Party more so than most in the past generation. But that, I would remind you of something. Goldwater lost the presidency and lost in a landslide. He was overwhelmingly defeated. Ronald Reagan, who was pro-life and pro-defense and who believed in traditional marriage, he beat an incumbent president and was reelected in the greatest landslide in American history, carrying every state but the state which was the home state of his opponent. When George H.W. Bush ran, he ran as a pro-life, read my lips, no new taxes Republican, who only got beat 4 years later because he reneged on his tax pledge. In 1992, Bill Clinton ran as a more moderate Democrat, reelected on that same platform. George Bush won as a pro-life, pro-traditional marriage Republican, reelected under those same principles. If you go back all the way to 1976, when we go to the mushy middle, we lose. When we stick with something that is clear and decisive in conviction and clarity, we win. It's just as simple as that.
So you still think this is a center-right country and that we did not see an important shift and that we did not see the great majority of young people in this country vote, I think, overwhelmingly for Barack Obama. If that demographic trend continues, Governor, the Republican Party's in trouble.
Interestingly, the most recent analysis of the election shows that younger voters did not vote in any greater percentage than they voted 4 years ago. That was a surprise to all of us because we had this perception of two things, that Barack Obama was largely fueled by small donors. He wasn't. He was fueled by the same type of donors who fuel most presidential campaigns, the large donors. And secondly, that he brought out this extraordinary wave of younger voters. He actually didn't. He got a bunch of them, and understandably so. But in my book, one of the things I talk about is elections by eBay, the financial system by which we elect people. I think it's a chapter that sort of challenges this notion that it's all about money.
An idea we'll continue talking about with Governor Huckabee when we continue. Ken Rudin will stay with us. It's the Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about the Republican Party and looking back at the election for lessons on the future of the GOP. Political junkie Ken Rudin is with us, also former governor and Republican presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. We want to hear from Republican listeners today. What's the future of your party? Does it need to be more moderate or less so? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Governor Huckabee is with us from the studios of WDET, our member station in Detroit. And let's get Lonnie on the line. Lonnie calling us from Boise in Idaho.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I voted for John McCain. Let me start there. And I would not vote for Barack Obama, but I'm really very disappointed in the direction the Republican Party has taken. The Republican Party, to me, has been historically the party of personal freedoms and personal choices and holding back the intrusion of the federal government so much into our lives. And when I see the Republican Party turning into basically a Christian right organization based on pro-life, which the governor, with all due respect to his views, there's a huge difference in the mass of cells and the lives. I don't think that anybody would advocate anywhere for an 8-month-old baby inside a woman's stomach to be able to be aborted. But when we're talking in the first trimester, there's no consciousness. There's obviously no life there. And if a woman finds herself in that position, we would all be better served to let her make that choice for herself.
Lonnie, can I interrupt you just a moment, please? Because sure. I would really take issue that that's not a life. 23 chromosomes from a male and 23 from a female come together and create a unique DNA schedule. And often I'm challenging people to say, you know, you guys need to be more scientific. You need to focus more on the irrefutable facts of science. Well, here's an irrefutable fact of science. When 23 chromosomes from the male and female create that unique DNA schedule, it is life. It's not a puppy. It's not a dolphin. It's not a stalk of broccoli. It's life. And the only kind of life it is a human life, and it has every bit of the DNA schedule at the moment of conception that it will ever have, even if it's later 80 years old. And you said that nobody wants one. Let me finish, Lonnie. Nobody, okay, you say, wants there to be a termination of the 8-month-old. That's simply not true. Partial birth abortion is exactly the termination of a perfectly healthy, normal human baby that is taken in the last moments of his or her life. And there are people who advocate that that's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. I think it's an abominable thing to do, to crush the skull of a human baby. For no particular purpose other than it represents an economic inconvenience or a social interference to somebody. And I just have to say that that is simply not borne out by the facts. And biologically and scientifically, it is irrefutable as to whether it is a life, and it's irrefutable as to whether it is a human life.
Can we get back to Lonnie's other point, though? Is the party a creature of the Christian right, Governor?
No, of course not. There are a lot of people who are Jewish who are in the party, quite comfortable. There are people who are not religious at all. There are people who are Roman Catholic. There are people who are Mormon. There are all kinds of people in the Republican Party. You don't have to have a particular religious view to be a part of the Republican Party, and it does essentially go to the idea of individual freedom and personal liberty. But if you take the freedom or life from somebody, then many Republicans, myself included, believe that it is the one function of government to protect the innocent from those who would prey upon them.
And I, a good majority of that I agree with. And I, there, you're right, there are a few people out there, I imagine, that are advocating for the partial birth abortion, but that's not what I'm talking about. As far as the genetic life that you want to talk about, I mean...
Lonnie, we've been over this a couple of times, so we want to move on to another call, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can go now to Mark, and Mark's with us from Fort Lauderdale in Florida, I believe.
Hi. Governor, the rabbi at my temple had to leave the country because in a lesbian partnership, her partner, she could not sponsor her as a married couple to become an American citizen. Is there any place in your America for gay couples?
Well, it's not just my America. It's all of America for all of us. And I think what people do in their own personal life is their business. The point at which I think many of us would have an issue is when there's an attempt to redefine what marriage means. Once we redefine it, then do we accommodate everybody's lifestyle? Do we accommodate everybody's definition? Is it okay then? Do we need to apologize to the people in West Texas who thought that men could have 20, 30 wives? Because really, what makes that a different choice for marriage as same sex? So it's an issue that I think it's perfectly
right for gay couples to sponsor their same sex spouse. So this rabbi wouldn't have to leave the country.
Well, the point is the person is free to live any way they wish. They're not free, however, to redefine marriage unless the people choose. People have chosen in 30 states not to redefine marriage. That doesn't mean that that individual is prohibited from having a same-sex relationship. It's just prohibited from saying that it's the same as a male-female marital relationship.
Will you answer this specific question about couples sponsoring their same-sex spouse if the other is not an American citizen?
I'm not familiar with the details of the case, and I wouldn't understand why a person couldn't sponsor another individual to come. That I don't understand.
That is a marriage right, but not a right for same-sex couples, Governor.
Well, if you believe you can convince a majority of Americans to change the definition of marriage, then you'll win that argument. I don't think you're going to do that anytime soon.
Mark, thanks very much for the call. Would you be in favor of civil unions that would provide for same-sex couples to have, for example, the rights to visit each other when they're sick in the hospital, that sort of thing, the kind of thing that President-elect Obama supports?
People generally can do a power of attorney and have all the rights that they want. In some states where they've done civil unions, that's been the idea that that's going to solve it all. As soon as they get it, then they say, well, what we really want is marriage. The issue for me is marriage, and that's what I think has got to be front and center. The fact is, and it's sad, that half of the marriages in this country end in divorce. We need to do a better job of the marriage rights that we have rather than to create new versions of it.
I just wanted clarity there. Are you in favor of civil unions, or do you fear them as – or you oppose them as the thin end of the wedge towards marriage?
I think it's typically been sort of the beginning toward moving to marriage, and particularly in light of the fact that through other legal means, people can have visitation rights in the hospital, can have survivor benefits, and people have a right to do that. But if we're moving toward changing the definition of marriage or family, I have a problem with it. That's one of the things that I try to address, and I want to mention the book specifically because
sure.
Obviously we're not going to have time to get into everything here. And one of the purposes for writing it is to give some thorough, not only definition, but some detailed explanation. And, for example, one of the chapters on what about created equal do you not understand, the message there on the pro-life perspective I think would be very helpful when someone says, I don't understand you pro-life people. I think that chapter would maybe not change their mind. I don't know that I would be so bold as to suggest that, but I certainly believe that people would have a better understanding of the intellectual perspective and the basis for and the rationale for a pro-life position.
The situation on immigration, again, as you look ahead towards the demographics in this country, Latinos voted 2-1 for Barack Obama. They are a growing portion of the country in every state, but clearly played important parts in places like Colorado and New Mexico and might next time in Arizona, certainly in Nevada. And as you look ahead to that part of the population, the principal issue that they want to see their lawmakers address right now is immigration reform.
And we should deal with it. But I think even most Hispanics that I know and talk to want there to be two things. First, security of the border, because they're just as sensitive about as anyone else. Those who have worked very hard to come here legally are really offended that there would be an attempt to sort of break in through the back window. And there's an attempt to say, look, let's just sort of have an amnesty policy. I don't know many Hispanic people who think that's a good idea. I don't blame people for coming to this country. And in fact, all along the campaign trail, I used to say that we ought to get on our knees every night. Thank God we're in a country people are trying to break into, not one they're trying to break out of. That's a good thing for us. It's our government who has failed. Our government has failed by not having an orderly and simple system where it was actually possible for a person to get through the paperwork and come here legally to take jobs nobody else wanted, to be able to experience the American dream. And we ought to be able to do that. It shouldn't take sometimes as much as 17 or 18 years. Young lady worked for me in the campaign. Her parents, it took them 18 years to get their citizenship here. 18 years. A lot of people just say, I can't wait that long. And so they come illegally and they try to hide from the authorities. It's not what they want to do, but it's what our government's policies, the antiquated and completely irrational policies, have forced some people to feel they have to do.
Yet the party was perceived, and perhaps unfairly, but perceived by a lot of Latinos, particularly after a lot of the rhetoric in the House of Representatives, as being anti-Latino.
I don't think it was anti-Latino at all. I think it was a simple matter of wanting everybody to have to play by the same rules. You can't go into Mexico as easily as people can cross the border into the United States. I think there's just simply a matter of saying we want to have secure borders. We want to know who's coming through the door. Heck, I can't go to a football game in my own state without a ticket. I've got to show up, and I can't just sit anywhere I want to. I've got to show that I have a right to be there. People expect that, but they expect their government to enforce it. You know, as long as a person can slip in through the back gate and stand on the sidelines, you don't so much blame the person standing on the sidelines. You blame the people who didn't have a better system of checking in the tourist or the fans at the sporting event.
We're talking with Governor Mike Huckabee, former Governor Mike Huckabee, along with political junkie Ken Rudin. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ken?
Governor, one of the excerpts of your book that the media seemed to pick up on is your dispute or your relationship or lack of same with Mitt Romney. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, it's a pretty minor part of the book. I mean, it's 240 pages, and I think there's a few references to Mitt Romney, mostly in the context of explaining why there was tension. And it wasn't just with Mitt Romney and myself. It was Mitt Romney and John McCain, Mitt Romney and Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney and most of the other candidates. And so I, in the spirit of candor and explanation, try to talk about why that existed. But the real focus of the book is not looking back. It's looking forward. And I think proportionally it's more like a car where you have a rear-view mirror in which you can glance backwards, but you have a lot more glass in the windshield, and that's the focal point is looking ahead. I'd say that's really where the book is. The reason I call it Do the Right Thing is because I think that, frankly, we need to understand that government starts with each of us individually. The best government of all is self-government. And so that's really the focus on the book. Some of the reviewers picked up on that, and even the reviewer Michael Scherer, whose review was the basis of a lot of other of the commentaries, was interesting. Many of the people who talked about the whole Mitt Romney thing had never read the book. They read Michael Scherer's review. If they'd read all the way to the end, Michael Scherer said this was a very small part of the book. It wasn't the main focus.
And Governor, just looking ahead quickly, when you were in Georgia, did you run into anybody who was not running for president in 2012?
Yeah, I don't know of anybody that said they were at that point. I don't think anybody wants to say they are, because 4 years ago, all the people who were touted as the front runners in the early stages, particularly the Republican primary, didn't even make it. Bill Frist and George Allen and Rudy Giuliani. And on the Democrat side, Hillary was unbeatable. Nobody was going to get near her. So whatever people are saying right now doesn't mean a thing when it comes to what's going to happen in 4 years.
Let's get Irfan on the line. Irfan with us from Chicago and in Illinois, of course.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Irfan here. Governor Huckabee, great fan of you.
Thank you.
And I'm actually male, Muslim, 26, from Chicago. And actually, like, I have traveled to, like, almost 8 to 9 countries. And I call myself Republican because it's kind of like my conservative views. But sometimes, like, for unnecessary reason, the Republican Party has used the name like Islamic extremism. I wrote to like the Republican Party that stop using the word perfect religion, because like if you align somebody with the religion, it's actually using their religion to destroy their name. For example, like if some Catholic pastor goes out and his case comes out as a like pedophile, we don't say that he was Catholic pastor. So that's what my question was, that how much you support as a Republican to 16 to 17 million Muslims who live freely in America.
Well, Efren, I think it's very important that we separate people who are Muslim and people who are terrorists, because not all Muslims are terrorists, to be sure. I've known many Muslims. In fact, right after 9/11, I was governor. I called together all of the Muslim leaders of my state. I invited them to the Capitol. We had a meeting. I held a press conference. I implored the people of my state to not be angry or hold responsible in any way the people of the mosque in their local community. I urged them to realize that because a person was a Muslim did not mean that they were terrorists. And in fact, many of the people standing with me that day, all of the people standing with me that day, were as appalled by the acts of terrorists as we were, and that no one should make some blanket characterization of all people who follow Islam as if they all subscribe to or support the idea of killing innocent people.
I completely agree with you that. And I have to make just one more point, 10 seconds. I was in Turkey. I could not pray in public places, but I can do in my America being a Muslim. And I can pray anywhere, and nobody's going to stop me. So thank you for your answer, sir.
Okay, Irfan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the phone call. And Governor Huckabee, we thank you for your time today. The name of the book, again, is Do the Right Thing, Inside the Movement That's Bringing Common Sense Back to America. Governor Huckabee is also a talk show host on television. As I understand it, you're going into direct competition on the radio come the new year as well.
Well, I don't know about that. I'll be doing a couple of commentaries every day on the ABC Radio Network, as well as the weekend show on Fox, and I hope people will read the book, make their own decisions. I know it's available in local bookstores. We're traveling to 56 of them here in the two-week period of the book tour, and it's available on Amazon.com as well.
Well, good luck with the book and the TV program. Hope those radio commentaries bomb. Governor Huckabee, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, Neil. Pleasure.
Former Governor Huckabee joined us from the studios of member station WDET in Detroit. And Ken Rudin, as always, thank you for your time today.
Did I mention the blog, the Political Junkie blog?
Somewhere it might have come up. He'll be back with us, of course, next week with the Political Junkie. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.